Okay, good morning. So, last time we were looking at networks of queues and got some interesting results for those sorts of systems. This time we're back to looking at single queues, in particular the analysis of loss systems. Okay. So we've already touched on this briefly, or even not so briefly, when we looked at the Erlon B formula. So we said we had M servers, and if they were all occupied, arrivals were dropped. And so we calculated the problem of the probability of blocking in terms of the Erlon B formula. Okay. So what we're going to do this time is we're going to look at take a more in-depth look at that at this concept of loss in a system. So we're going to examine different forms, different definitions of congestion for the system. We'll see how they apply to the Erlon setup, and then we'll also examine a second setup, the Engisset model, and compare the results we get for the two setups in terms of sort of what assumptions we have made and sort of what falls out. Okay. Okay, well, we'll have to take a short break while I see if I forgot to reveal them. I thought the analysis lecture 6, can people see that one? Do you guys have the notes? No. What's the matter then? This is going to be done, but okay, we're taking a short break while I find out what happened to the notes for this section. Oh, maybe the week is hidden. Okay, so I showed the notes, but I didn't show the week. Therefore, it didn't show up. Okay, so should have it now. Okay, apologies for that. Okay, so the notes are now available on Loop for you guys to access. So our loss system is a birth-death system with finite capacity, and I can put the view back on. Okay, so we have a fixed number of servers, and we have no queues associated with those servers. Okay, so no additional spaces in the system. Okay, and this basically applies to circuit switched type systems. So if you think about the switch capacity, you've got a certain number of outputs, and once, if it's circuit switched, you're reserving your resources, so once those resources are reserved, you know, nothing more can be accommodated. Okay. So, cores of networks still tend to be circuit switched. Optical networks tend to have a circuit switched flavor to them as well. So there's some, it serves, there's still applications for this sort of a system. Okay, so we'll just recap our Erlang properties as we saw before. So this is an MM, little m, infinity, Q. So we've got Poisson arrivals, Poisson service, M servers, M places in the system, so just server places, and then an infinite pool of customers, so sources. Okay. So we've already, again, analyzed the system to get the steady state state distribution for it, probability distribution for it. Okay, and so the number of busy servers, PK, was given by the formula there. And obviously, based on that, you can calculate the fraction of time that all the servers are busy, so state PM. And we phrase that in terms of our offered load, which was lambda over nu. Okay, so that's what we did before. PM is, again, Erlang's B formula, so we denote it as E for Erlang, and it's a function of N, of the number of servers you have and the load you're offering to the system. Okay. What PM does is it gives you what's called time congestion. It gives you the proportion of time that the system is fully busy. So that's the results that we derived previously when we were just looking at birth-death processes and sort of special cases of birth-death processes. Okay, again, we referred to lambda over mu as our offered load. And so we're going to take a little closer look at the interpretation of that. And in particular, in this case, it's easy enough to find that offered load. And then we are going to need to compare it to what's actually accepted into the system. Okay. So if we step back and look at a lossless system, then anything that enters the system exits the system eventually, and the offered load is the same as the carried load. Nothing is being rejected. And we saw that in that case, if we apply Little's law, the number of servers kept busy in the system is lambda times T, where T is the delay that a job experiences in the system, and that delay is 1 over mu. It always goes instantly into service. Okay, if you have an infinite number of servers. Okay, so an interpretation of that offered load, then, is that it's the average number of servers kept busy in a lossless system. Okay. Now, again, for the lossless system, we could derive our probabilities in terms of this offered load, and this is the, you know, again, this is a Poisson process with a mean of A. Okay, so that gives you the distribution on the number of busy servers in the system. Okay. Okay. So we also noted that if you had loss, then not all of the traffic would be carried. Okay. And so what we want to do is to define what is the carried load of the system. And so we do that sort of in the same way we would for our lossless system. We say that the carried load is the mean number of servers busy at any arbitrary time point in time. Okay, so that definition of carried load is the same for either a lossy or a lossless system. For a lossless system, the carried load is going to be the same as the offered load. Okay, so based on that definition, we can again calculate the carried load for our Erlang system. Okay, and that's just going to be the mean number of servers kept busy. Okay. Throughout the lecture, we're going to denote our carried load as A prime. And so, again, it's the number of servers kept busy, and we can do that calculation. So it's KPK. You substitute in your value for, PK, and then you go about playing with your sums. You can, by removing an A, you can get folding the K in. Essentially, the K is removed from the K factorial. You can do the sum now indexed from with K minus 1. Then play around with the values you're summing and get from K equals 0 to minus 1. And so that's the sum of PKs from 0 to M minus 1, so all but PM. Okay. So this sum then becomes 1 minus PM, and you have A times 1 minus PM. Which is, again, A times 1 minus E minus your Erlang B evaluated at MA. Okay. So again, this is sort of intuitive. You would think that the proportion of traffic that's lost is going to be the proportion, again, that arrives to find the system busy, and that's the probability that you're finding the system busy. So 1 minus that is the probability you find the system not busy.
Okay.
So we define now EMA as the time congestion against the time average over which the system is busy, and hence an arrival arrives to be lost. Okay. Okay, so that's fairly straightforward. We have our carried load, which is the proportion of traffic that's not turned away. From this we have, we can also see it's easy to find out the proportion of traffic that is lost. And again, we've just defined a term, time congestion, which is the amount of time the system spends with all the servers busy. Okay. So it turns out that this gives some measure of sort of how busy the system is. But there's other perspectives that we might want to, or we definitely want to take when looking at this idea of congestion. And the first one is, well, what does the arrival see? Okay. So our arrival is going to be lost if it arrives to a busy system. So what proportion of time is that going to happen? Okay. Now, we at this point say pasta plus on arrival C time averages. So for the airline system, you're going to see exactly the same as your time congestion. Okay. If we don't have Poisson arrivals, what we'll see is that that's not true. We'll actually see different things. Okay. So we define what's called call congestion, and denote it B, and we say it's the probability that a random call is lost, which is equal to the proportion of customers that are lost. So it's the lost customers over the total number of customers. Okay. So this is important, again, from a user's perspective, because that tells them what their probability of not being able to make their call is. So, again, it's this ratio. And if you think about, if you look at, examine any given time unit, then you have lambda t would be the number of customers arriving during that time unit. If you take it to be 1 second, then you can get rid of the t. And then, again, p, m, or ema of them are going to arrive to a full system. And the total number of customers in any given time unit, or in a single time unit, is lambda then. Okay. again, this is for, we're talking specifically here for the Erlang system with its plus on arrivals. Okay. So again, what we see for Erlang, our call congestion is the same as our time congestion. Okay. And again, that's a function of our pasta property, that Poisson arrivals will see our time averages. Okay. So again, the interpretation of our call congestion is how the customers perceive the system. So what's their chance of not making their call? Okay. And so this is related to the idea of grade of service. And so typically the systems are provisioned to give a minimum grade of service. Okay. Again, if you're just if you consider Erlang systems, it doesn't actually matter which of our congestion figures we take, because they're all the same. Okay. So, again, if we don't have Poisson arrivals, then our call congestion is not going to be equal to our time congestion. And of the two, the more significant factor will be the call congestion. Okay, so it's more important how your customers see your system than it is sort of whether your system is completely busy or busy all but one. Okay. Okay. So that's the customer perspective, and you know, again, usually as a regulatory issue, carriers are required to provide a certain grade of service. Okay, so now from the network's perspective, what's significant is the amount of lost traffic. So the proportion of offered traffic that's not carried, because this is the proportion of traffic that you can't bill. Okay. So again, the amount of lost traffic is as a proportion, it's just the offered load minus the carried load, so that's what gets lost, over the offered load. Okay. And so, again, we can, for Erlang specifically, we can use our previous calculations of A prime, and we see, again, our traffic congestion C is equal to our time congestion. Okay. So, again, all of them are equal. And traffic congestion is of interest to the operator, to the network, because it, again, gives an indication of sort of what you're losing in revenue by not carrying customers. Okay. So, we've defined these three types of congestion. So we have traffic. So we have time congestion, we have call congestion, we have traffic congestion. And what we saw was because of our pasta property, because we had our croissant arrivals, all three, for the airline system, all three are equal. So just to show that that's not always the case, we'll consider now a system that does not have croissant arrivals. Okay, and we'll see how these various factors look for that sort of a system. Okay, so the system we're looking at is called the Engisset system, and like the Erlang, it consists of M servers with no queues, but now we assume that we have a finite user population. Okay, so something like, you know, a private branch exchange in an office. You'll have rented out a certain number of lines to use to share amongst your users, and you'll switch them within the company. So we always assume that we have more users than lines, otherwise you don't have loss. And yeah, you have no savings because you've obviously over-provisioned your system, so you're not allowing any, you're not provisioning for any sharing whatsoever. Okay. So now, if a user is making a call, they can't simultaneously be arriving into the system. Okay, so once a user is busy, then they're not arriving. So we assume that, as before, our call holding times are exponentially distributed. But now, instead of assuming an inter-arrival time with an exponential distribution, we're now going to assume the time between calls is exponentially distributed. Okay. So, in other words, a user makes a call, and then the next time they make a call has this perfectly random property when, you know, once they're finished making the first call. Okay. So now our arrival process is not Poisson, it's a function of the state of the system. It's still a Markov system because we still have the memoryless property, so obvious for the departure times, but if you think of it, you know, your pool of inter-arrivals is shrinking, but each one of those has an underlying exponential distribution, so overall your exits from the states are exponential and therefore memoryless. Okay. So that it's good that it's still a Markov process, so we can still apply our usual techniques to it. Okay. So again, we get our arrival rates and departure rates are both state dependent. Obviously, the departure is dependent on how many jobs are in service, and the arrival rate is dependent on how many jobs are idle or how many customers are idle. Okay. So gamma is the arrival rate of an idle source. Okay, so conversely, it's exponentially distributed, so the average idle period is 1 over gamma. M is our number of servers. S is the number of sources. Again, we assume S is greater than M. If it's less than M, you've over-provisioned your system, and nothing interesting happens. Mu is the service rate. And we can solve our equilibrium solutions. Okay. And again, you can look at the ratio of gamma to mu now, so that we call that beta. And that's the offered load per idle source. Obviously, the total offered load is state dependent. It's depending on how many sources are idle at the moment.
So can I just ask on the equilibrium solution, just how does that formula read? Just struggling with some of these. Is that the product from I to K minus one?
Yes, that's product. Yeah, yeah. So you remember when you did it recursively,
yes.
You'd be right P1 and you get the essentially a lambda over mu plus some, but essentially you get lambda over mu for here, and then when you do P0, you get lambda over you add, that's P2 is P1. Times lambda over mu for here, and so you keep building up these products. You keep multiplying by some factor of lambda over mu plus essentially these constants. So yeah, that's a product. Okay. So as usual, you get Pk as a function of P0, and then P0 is 1 over the sum of these things, 1 over the sum of Pks, and subbing that back in, you get Pk, a formula for Pk, in terms of this offered load per idle source. Okay. So, if you do some work with limits, if we assume that the number of sources increases to infinity, keeping a fixed arrival rate, then this system will tends towards the Erlang system. Okay. So if your number of customers is in any way large, typically you're going to just assume that it's close enough to an Erlang system. Okay. So this is the case where your number of customers isn't that far off your number of resources. Okay. So, as I said before, the arrival rate is dependent, on the state you're in, but more specifically, it's also dependent on the number of servers that you have. Because again, you only have so many customers. So the more servers you have, the more time they're actually spending in the system. And so intuitively, again, that will give you a different arrival rate to a small number of servers where they're being kicked out regularly. Okay. So what we want is to have a way of defining our offered load that's independent of the system. And again, you do that by comparing it to a lossless system. Okay. And so for a loss, and we have what we call an intended offered load, so that's a measure of, if we had all the resources, again, how much could the system carry? So we want to calculate this intended offered load, again, in terms of the number of servers, the number of busy servers. Okay. So for this setup, in order to have no loss, you need S servers. So in order to have absolutely no loss, you need a server per customer. Okay, that means it doesn't matter when they arrive. They always find at least one server empty. So we use that system to calculate what our offered load is. So again, we calculate it as the average number of servers that would be kept busy in a lossless version of the system. Okay. And that's K times PK, and so then we can sub in our value for PK. Okay, and obviously the numerator. The denominator is the same for all of the values of PK. That's the 1 over P0. Okay, so we use the binomial theorem. So that gives us sum n juice k x to the k is x plus 1 to the n. And we use that to try and evaluate the sum that we have. Okay, so for the numerator, we need to get rid of our k term, and we do that using our usual trick of taking the derivative. Okay, and that allows us to pull out bury that k term. Okay, we then, again, this sum is given by the binomial theorem, and then we just take the derivative of that sum. Okay, so that gives you the numerator. And the denominator falls out directly. Okay, so adding those two together, you get this figure for the offered load in terms of the number of servers that would be kept busy in a loss-free system. Okay. So we call that again. We'll call our intended offered load A. We can calculate the variance in the same way, just explicitly. Now you have a sum of k squared, take two derivatives, and you'll get the variance is S beta. And why this is of interest is, I think we mentioned peakedness briefly previously. The ratio of variance to mean is referred to as peakedness. And peakedness gives a measure sort of the smoothness or not of the traffic. And basically, the smoother your traffic, so the smaller this peakedness value, the lower your probability of blocking is. Okay, because extreme things aren't happening, or are happening much less likely. Okay, so evaluating the variance over the mean for the Engisset system, we get our peakedness is 1 over 1 plus beta. Now, beta is a positive number. So, again, your peakedness is less than 1. And, again, you can contrast this to Poisson traffic, where the mean and variance gives us a peakedness of 1. So what we would expect is that our system is going to behave better than it would for the Erlang system. Okay. So, again, if the if your peakedness is less than 1, you say the traffic is smooth relative to Poisson traffic. And if it's greater than 1, you say it's peaked. And again, generally, peaked traffic will result in greater congestion. Okay. So that can be used to as a characteristic of non a way of characterizing non-Poisson traffic. And if you want to model it, sometimes it's sufficient to just come up with a distribution which has a mean and a variance according to a peakedness. Okay. Okay. So that's given us a way of measuring our offered load. Again, the offered load is measured in terms of if you didn't have loss, how much of the system would you be keeping busy? We'd now like to calculate our various congestion functions. So we have time congestion, we have call congestion, and traffic congestion. Okay. And what we can do then is we'll compare these various functions for the Engisset model and see, again, they're not equal in this case. Okay, so start, as we did before, with time congestion. The time congestion is the proportion of time that all the servers are busy, and that's equal to PM, where M is the number of servers. And we call that ES, or Engisset with S servers. Okay. sorry, with S customers. Okay. So this is obviously a function of the number of customers S and the number of servers M, and it's referred to as the Engisset loss formula. Okay. So again, that's the proportion of time that the system is busy. And if we had Poisson arrivals, they would, again, arrive, see that time average. But we don't have Poisson arrivals. So we now have to, again, calculate our call congestion separately. Okay, so the call congestion is a proportion of calls that are blocked, and we look at the ratio of the blocked calls to the total call attempts during a single time unit, as we did. That's exactly what we did for the Erlang formula. And that gives us, again, we have the arrival rate for the arrival rate given into a busy system times the proportion of time our system is busy, and that's over, again, the essentially averaged arrival rate for being in all the different states of the system. Okay, so we plug in for PM and PK, and they all have the same denominator, so we drop the denominators, which still leaves us with a sort of fussy enough equation. But what we note now is, again, we can eliminate our gammas, and we can subsume our S minus M, or we can remove our S minus M from the S choose M. That gives you S minus 1 choose M. And what we note is that that's E S minus 1. Okay. And again, E S minus 1 would be the probability that you have that S minus 1 customers are fully occupying the system. Okay, so the S minus 1 customer, that's probably that the S minus 1 customers have filled the M servers. So that's intuitively, that seems okay. Okay. So again, for our final customer or our last customer to encounter a full system, again, that means that everybody else must have already filled up the system. Okay. So you can think of the customer is being sort of outside of the system, and so what's left is, again, a system with S minus 1 customers, and when would they arrive to find the full, to find the system busy? Okay. So, again, intuitively, that doesn't seem too off. Again, that intuition has a name. It's known as the arrival theorem. Arrivals are going to see the system as if there's one less source for the system. Again, in the case of Erlang, since we're assuming infinite sources, one less of infinity is still infinity. Okay. So the other, so the significant point now is that our time and call congestions aren't equal. Okay. And you would think that the call congestion is going to be a smaller figure than the time congestion. So again, like probably that S minus one customers fill up the system is less than the probability that S customers fill up the system. Okay, so again, that value is going to be tied to our grade of service and whatever promises we have to make to the customers. And again, from the operator point of view, what we want is to lose as small a proportion of our revenue as possible. So traffic congestion, again, is the ratio of the volume of traffic lost to the volume of traffic offered. Okay, so, and again, you calculate lost traffic by first calculating what traffic you managed to carry. Okay. So, obviously, the carried traffic is just K times P of K. So the average number, that's the average number in the system. And we can substitute in for, again, P of K. And then, again, we do our usual sort of messing around with our operations to get it into a form that we can use. Okay. So we can pull out beta, which gives you our k minus 1, and also pull out s minus k plus 1. Okay. And that changes this to s choose k minus 1. And then recognize that that's pk minus 1. Okay. So you now have k equals 1 to m pk minus 1 times this term. And again, you can change the range of evaluation to get rid of then that k minus 1. What we really would like is from 0 to m, so we can get the sum from 0 to m by, again, adding in and then subtracting off the m term. And then you pull out an S, you're left with then a sum of PKs, and then minus a beta times a sum term minus, again, our last term. Okay. And our sum KPK is, again, A prime. So we have an A prime term, and then sum from k equals 0 to m, pk is 1. So we have an equation in which we can now solve, pull out the a prime and solve for it. Okay. And so we get A prime in terms of, you know, what we'd expect to get it in terms of our intended offered load. Our offered load and the number of servers and the number of customers and our probability of blocking. Okay, so once you that is a bit fiddly, but once you have that, then your traffic congestion again is just A minus A prime over A. So the lost load over the total load. Okay, and that actually falls out relatively nicely. Okay. So again, what we see is that this term always has to be less than one. So again, the traffic congestion is always less than the time congestion. So again, for some intuition, always look at sort of the boundary cases. So if we, again, have our lossless system where the number of servers is equal to the number of sources, then our time congestion is the probability that all of the servers are busy, but our traffic congestion is zero because all of the offered load is carried. Okay, so in this case, A would equal to A prime. So again, if you look at this boundary case where, you know, essentially we've gone to a lossless system, we'll again see that our call congestion is zero as well. Okay. Is that obvious from that or not? It's fairly obvious. Okay, so with a little work, you can also show, so again, for the sensible case where we have more customers, the loss, okay, a case where loss will occur, you can show that traffic congestion is always less than your call congestion. Okay, so again, what we've seen in this case is that because we did not have Poisson inter-arrivals, that again, the view of the customer and the operator and indeed the state of the system are not equivalent. Okay, so we'll look at an example now. Okay, so the numbers are small so that we can actually do something with it. Here we have essentially three input channels. That's our customer and a single output channel. So three are going in two, one. Okay, and we have measured our total input traffic, and each input port is contributing a third of it, so they're all contributing equally. Okay, so each port is independent of each other, and we have a certain packet size and transmission rate, so that will give us our service rate. Okay. And so we want to model this to be able to calculate our three different types of congestion. Okay. So, if we sort of don't assume anything about the arrival process, well, we can see what happens if we apply Erlang and then possibly see why that's not a good idea and try for Engisset instead. Okay. So in the first case, we assume that our packet arrival times are Poisson, or the arrival process is Poisson. Okay. Our transmission times, we'll also assume, are exponentially distributed, and therefore we'll deploy the Erlang loss model. Okay, and here we have a single server. Okay. So our offered load is lambda, big lambda over mu, so 0.4 Erlangs. Our time congestion can be calculated from the Erlang formula, so it's just, again, the probability of blocking, so the probability that you're maximally, that you're full. In this case, it's easy because we only have one server, so all those sums go away. Okay. So, if you had more servers, you'd obviously be back looking at your charts, but in the case of one server, you can just plug directly into the formula. Okay. Once we have our time congestion, our traffic and our call congestion are the same, so it's the same for all. Okay. So again, why wouldn't this necessarily be a good model to use, particularly in terms of the arrival process? And the problem is that if you have a channel, it's either in use or not in use. Okay. If you assume that you have now Poisson arrivals and now exponential packet lengths, what can happen is that arrivals on the line can overlap. Okay. So you can have one job in service, and on the same line you then get the second job coming. But again, that's not the way the line would work. The line would work, but the jobs have to be sequential. They can't overlap. So that's not going to be a great representation for that sort of a system. Okay, so if we go for our Engisset model, then what we say is that the idle periods are exponential instead. So we have exponential packet length. So now we get, again, a sequence of jobs arriving in on each of the lines. Okay, so we'll see. So we made some argument that the Engisset model is a more appropriate one. Now we'll see how to solve for our different components. Okay. And so the first thing we need to do is to determine what the arrival rate is per idle source. Okay. And again, this needs to be derived from lambda, our big lambda, our overall rate. Okay, so we can do that by looking at our carried traffic. Okay. And so A prime, that is the fraction of time the output channel is busy, or the probability that a source is not is busy and not ready to arrive into the system. Okay, so obviously, you know, again, there's the tie between somebody being in service and somebody not, so therefore not able to contribute to the arrival rate. Okay. That means that the average number of idle sources is S minus A prime. And so the overall arrival rate is given by the average number of idle services times the arrival rate for that. And so gamma then would be lambda over S minus A prime. We have a formula for A prime now. And from that we can calculate our value of gamma, and beta is just gamma over mu then. Okay, so that means that we have a means of calculating each of our types of congestion now. Okay. So, again, because we only have our single channel, the time congestion has to be equal to the carried traffic. And again, both are proportional to the amount of time the system is busy, given that we only have one server. Okay. So, plugging in to A prime now, with ES equals A prime, M equals 1 and S equals 3, we can solve for our value of A prime. Okay, so that's, so we've now calculated our time congestion, which is the same as our carried load. So we now need beta, and so we can substitute in our value for A prime. Into 1, and we will get a lambda over mu is now a quadratic in beta. And so we solved for that quadratic. Okay. So we need the positive root, obviously, and so we get our value for beta. Okay, so now that we have beta, we have ES in terms of beta, And so we can solve for yes. So that gives us our traffic congestion. Sorry, our time congestion, our traffic congestion. We just plug in our value for ES. And for our call congestion, again, we plug in our values for the lost calls over total average number. Okay. So, again, what we see is that we get, as we said, we get different values for each of our types of congestion in the sort of order that we expected. And again, we can compare that to our Erlang B case, where they're all equal. So what we see is that E of S is greater, so the probability of the full system being busy is greater, but that still leads to less traffic and call congestion. Okay. Again, that's to do with the peakedness and just how the arrivals are occurring. Okay. So normally I'd call a break now, but I think it won't take us that long to finish up this last topic, so what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to plow on today, and once we finish this last topic, we'll be done for the day. So, again, what we've seen here is we have different ways of calculating different types of congestion, and again, these will be interpreted differently, or attached to sort of different interpretations. So again, call congestion is a customer view, traffic congestion is the sort of operator or system view. So all of these calculations so far have been based on an assumption about how many servers you have, so how many resources you have. So, so far one question we've asked is, well, if you want a certain grade of service, resources, how many lines or how many servers do you need? So what you'd like to be possibly to be able to do is to sort of examine a trade-off between the number of servers you have and the revenue that you're bringing in. So how many customers can you serve relative to resources provided? And the idea here would be, why not just always well over provision the system, because resources cost money. Why not under provision the system? Well, all your customers will leave you, but beyond that, you will lose a certain percentage of them and not be able to charge them. So what you'd like to be able to do is reason about the balance between those two costs, keeping in mind, again, that a lot of times in a regulatory environment, you'll still have to provide a fixed grade of a minimum grade of service. Okay. So we're going to look at the Erelong for this. Just obviously, the ideas will apply to any system that you propose. Okay. So, again, we for Erelong, we've asked the question of what, how many channels do we need to, you know, again, achieve a certain blocking probability. Okay. So now we'd like to look at what happens when we try and balance sort of turning away customers versus adding channels. And so this idea of this making this comparison is referred to as Mohs principle or the improvement principle, and it asks the question of essentially what is the improvement ratio for adding additional channels. And obviously that's going to be a function of how many you already have. If you already have lots of channels, then adding another one isn't going to buy you much. If you have very few channels, then even adding one should significantly improve your customer experience, okay, and the number of customers you can carry. Okay. So, again, let A be the offered load to N channels. Then we have a cost associated with adding an extra channel. And we have a revenue per Erelong of traffic carried. And again, we'd like to examine the number of channels in terms of balancing revenue, getting more customers in versus paying for more channels. Okay. So, again, we look at the edges, the boundaries. If N is very small, you don't have a lot of cost in terms of channels, but you're losing most of your customers. You're turning away most of your customers. At the other extreme, again, if N is very large, then you actually, your blocking probability is going to be very small anyway. The cost of the channels overall is large, and the incremental cost of adding a channel is going to be small relative to the incremental gain in terms of additional customers, because again, you're already getting most of them through, so you're not going to actually pick up that much more by adding another channel. Okay, so we'd like to examine that balance. Okay. So we have, we define an improvement function, which is in terms of the number of channels and the offered load, and essentially it's how much additional load can you carry by adding a channel. Okay. So again, if you think about that, when you have a small number of channels, that improvement function will be large. When you have a lot of channels, that improvement function will be small. Okay, so again, it's the extra traffic if we add one more channel. Okay. So how much income do we generate? Well, that's, you just add, you multiply by G, however much you're charging. Okay. So again, the more channels you have, the less improvement you get from adding any given channel. So at some point, you know, it's just not going to be worth it. So, what we can ask then is, well, at what point does the cost of adding a channel exceed the return or revenue? Okay. And so we want essentially G, F, and A is about equal to C, or, you know, move the G over and say C. There's got to be some point at which, you know, you tip over that line.
Would the ideal system be to have G, G of F, and N as close to C as possible?
Yes, although, again, yes, but what you have to factor into those are what, actually, how do you choose the values of C and G, then? Because it cost is not necessarily just the monetary cost, but it's, you know, again, factoring in, well, whatever you want to factor in, essentially. So again, if your customers are very sensitive to loss, then G ought to be high relative to C, etc. So it's, so actually, what changes is, yeah, you do want to be here, but what exactly this value is what's important and takes some, some thought as to how you want to pick it. Okay. So the C over G, again, is called an improvement value or a marginal utility. So again, that's it's the measure of the benefit you get by adding a channel, and we just call it FB. And again, we find our optimal N based on that value FB. Okay, and as I just said, it's not just an engineering decision. Okay. So again, if this sort of a calculation, it's a business calculation, and it's somewhat separate from the issue of grade of service. But again, typically, so you might pick an N, and maybe, again, maybe your customers aren't very sensitive, so you can give them really crappy service, so you can pick a fairly low N. But typically in a regulatory environment, again, there's going to be some lower floor on that, so grade of service also has to be catered for. Okay. So again, what's sort of significant is not actual monetary values, but the ratio. Again, a high ratio means that it's important to invest and give your customers a good quality of service. A low ratio means that, you know, they're fairly tolerant of whatever you serve up to them. Okay. Okay. So, in terms of typical values, typical values range from something like 0.35 to 0.05. So, again, if you think about it, if you look at that ratio in terms of this, again, it you can see it is sort of, you will get your grade of service out of that as well. So, yeah, where are we? Okay, so 0.05 is the sort of standard system that we've been looking at, so you'll get a grade of service of 0.05 as well as what you need. And that essentially assumes that there's no alternative routing possible, so that's it, that's the end of the line. 0.35 typically is attached to a different sort of system, a system where essentially your loss is routed into an overflow network. Okay, so you have primary, you have loss on the primary system, but that then gets routed into a secondary system for, and so it's not lost overall to the system, just again to the primary system. Okay. And we'll be looking at that setup of a system in our final lecture. Okay. So, again, we can look at just an example of how we might use this to think about systems. We have an optical link with 30 airlines, and we want to decide how many channels to provide. So we're, again, we fix our marginal utility, and then we can calculate our improvement function and find our optimal number of channels. Okay. And so, again, you could do that. You could do it by referring back to the chart constantly, or again, once you find a single value for an Erlang system, you can find the following values in an iterative fashion. So we'll do it that way. Okay. So our improvement function, again, gives us how much extra traffic will we carry if we add an additional channel? And we'll start with, again, what's the probability of blocking if you have 34 channels? Then, again, you can incrementally find the probability of blocking given the 35th. And you can keep going. Okay, well, that gives you your improvement function. Okay. And we can keep going calculating our incremental values. using them to give you an improvement function, and eventually, again, what we see is we have the 36 channels, we have sufficient improvement. Okay. Okay. So that says that for this setup, our optimal number of channels is 36. Okay, so again, you could plot this here. We've fixed our offered load, and we can, again, starting at any point, plot our improvement function relative to our number of channels. And again, what we see is that as we start out, obviously, any channel, if you have no channels, any channel added is a big benefit. Again, at some point, adding channels isn't really giving us a big benefit at all. Okay. Another option for looking at this is to think about minimizing the total cost. So instead of looking at the ratio, just look at the costs. Obviously, you know, again, one cost is rising and one cost is falling at all times. Okay. The cost of adding channels is rising. The cost of the improvement to the service, there's a decrease in the as you add more channels, then there's a decrease in the number of in the amount of load not carried. Okay. So again, as n gets bigger, the first term increases linearly, the second term is decreasing not linearly. Okay. And again, if you think in this case we took g to be 1, but if you look, if you were to plot it out, again, what you'd see is you get initially a decrease in cost because, again, you're carrying more and more of the traffic, so you don't have the cost of not carrying traffic. It reaches its minimum point, assuming our G to C ratio is the same, it would reach the minimum point at the same place at 36. And then after that, particularly as we go on, the cost of not carrying traffic essentially is stabilizing as a very small, very small factor, whereas the cost of adding channels, again, this is just going up linearly as n. Okay, so at some point, the improvement in terms of service is being balanced out by the cost of provisioning. Okay, so that's that for today's lecture. Again, it's a more in-depth look at loss systems, and again, it points out things that if you sort of just stuck with the Erlang, you wouldn't see the sort of the complexities of the interpretations. So we'll have our last lecture next week, obviously. And we'll be looking at this idea of having overflow systems, so you have a system with where instead of having loss, well, you have loss to the primary system, but that is shunted over into an overflow system, so it's not lost to the system overall. And so again, that won't be it won't be as long a lecture next week either. So that's it for this week. Have a good weekend, and I will see you guys next week.